Lost evening sun is sinking low. I'm beginning to feel that. I don't know if that's been prophetic for me or what, but anyway, glad that you're here, and I pray that we'll have good worship, and when you leave, you can say it's been good to have been here. Many of you will probably not recognize the name of Toya Graham. That may not be familiar to you. If you've watched the news much, you probably remember that name. It's the name of a mother who caught her son in the Baltimore riots and tried to direct him in a more fruitful way. And all of us, you know, we looked at that and we were thankful that there was a mother who took action. And she did something to save her son from what could be a very devastating experience. I've got great memories of growing up. I got memories of evening dinners, which evening dinners consisted only of a couple of things, such as a pot of beans and some homemade bread. That was about it. But I also have memories of family, being together, playing in the backyard, sibling rivalry, parental control. I remember those things. And I'm not suggesting that we need to return to those days. I mean, it would be helpful if we did some of those things again. But I recognize times have changed. Things are different. Families struggle. And sometimes it just takes two incomes to keep it together. Evening dinners together in many families is not only a thing of the past, but probably never existed, not only because it took two incomes, but because kids today are going in every which direction, school activities and what have you. Technology has created a gap between generations. Many changes have been good. Some have been somewhat damaging. As we look at our culture, I think we can honestly say that our culture needs a cleaning. It needs a new start, something better than what we have today. But I can also say that we can no longer sit on the sidelines and be passive about that. If there was ever a time when not only God's people, but all of America needs to become proactive, it's now. Toya Graham took action when she saw her child in a way that would be destructive. Some applauded her, some criticized her. When I saw her slapping that boy on the head, I thought, that feels familiar. And I think I turned out okay. Then there's the mom who had her 10-year-old son arrested. She couldn't do anything with him. The school couldn't do anything with him. He was very disruptive, wouldn't behave himself. And you may have seen the pictures of him crying like crazy because the police officer was taking him away. And it was interesting because there was two psychologists side by side and they were discussing this, and one was saying, it's the greatest thing that ever happened to that boy. And the other one says, are you crazy? I thought, well, obviously psychologists can't agree. So everybody has a different opinion about that. But I understand he's a different child now. So apparently it must have had some good. I want to talk to moms and dads, grandmas, grandpas. It's Mother's Day. And I Lord, I wish all of you mothers the greatest of days. You deserve more than just one. You deserve hundreds of them. You really do. You have, in many respects, have the power to change the way the world lives. And I want to talk to grandmothers, to grandfathers, to moms and dads, aunts, uncles, anyone who has influence upon this next generation. And what I'm suggesting this morning is not necessarily original with me, as you will find out, but and let me also say that if someone else gave this message, may have something different to say. But here's what I would like to suggest, that as parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, and anyone else who has influence about over our children or with our children, let me suggest that we teach our children that they are special. We have young people striving to win parental approval as well as acceptance amongst their peers. And they need to understand that they're special. That approval doesn't necessarily make you somebody. We feel like what happens is that many of our kids are being defined by somebody else. And they need to understand that they are special, and they are special because they were created by God. God created our kids. Our kids need to know that they are no accident or product of some evolutionary process. And believe me, there's a lot of people trying to convince them of that. But every child needs to understand that they are unique, they are different, and every child is as different as snowflakes are different. They say you can never find two snowflakes that are alike. You will not find two children that are alike. They're all different, and that makes them very special. They're special because they bear the image of God. God said, "Let us make man in our image, in our likeness." In the image of God, He created him. Male and female, He created them. I don't understand that language. I don't know what it means to be created in the image of God. And trust me, nobody else does either. There's volumes that have been written trying to define and trying to understand and trying to hone down what it really means to be created in the image of God. And I finally come to the conclusion, I probably will never know what that all means, but I can still accept it. I can still accept it, and I can still appreciate the fact that I have been created in the image of God. And I thank God for that. We're special because God has a plan for us, and He has a plan for our kids. I don't want you to ever forget Jeremiah chapter 1 and verse 4. I don't want you to ever forget this verse. Because God said to Jeremiah, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you." You understand the implications of that passage? When that child was conceived in the womb, God says, "I formed you. I made you. before you were formed, before I formed you, I knew you. You understand now why we argue so vehemently against the abortion process? Not only did God form that child, but He said, before you were born, I consecrated you. And I submit to you this morning that every child born today, God has a plan for them. We tell our kids, look, go out there, make a difference in the world, do what you want, follow your dreams, and so on and so forth. And I agree with a lot of that. But don't ever forget that God has a plan. And we need to teach our kids to know, listen, yes, you are an individual and you are very special. You've been created in the image of God. But I want you to know that God's got a plan for you. And He wants you to fulfill that plan. In a couple of weeks, we're going to honor our graduates. I'm not sure how many we got. I thought we only had four. Then I heard we had five. Now I think we're up to seven. And I'm thinking, how am I losing this, you see? But how many ever we got, every one of them, when they leave, they're going to pursue whatever career they choose to pursue. But that career still has God's plan in it. And we need to teach our kids that God has a plan. If that doesn't make you special, that God's got a plan just for you. Just for you. You're the only one that can fulfill this. But they are also special because they are special, but not superior. You may recall on June the 1st, 2012, David McCullough stirred the nation with his speech when he told the graduating class of the high school where he was teaching. In his commencement address, he said, "You're not special." And everybody focused on that phrase, "You're not special." He says they took it out of context. He said, "What I said was, you're not special because all of you are special." And the idea was, you're not superior to anybody else. No one is superior to anyone else. We are all special. Sometimes parents push their children to excel. Get ahead. Do it better than anyone else. And certainly we want to encourage them to do the best they can. But I don't believe our kids need to find out or need to hear the words that you're superior to anybody else. Because no one is superior. We're all special. We need to teach them biblical values. I picked up a book recently written by a man named David Brooks, who is a columnist for the New York Times. The title of the book is The Road to Character. And quite frankly, I suggest everybody pick up that book. And he speaks in this particular in his introduction and as well as into the first chapter. He says, you write two resumes. He says, you write your resume in which you put down your skills, your education, your background, your experiences, and so on, to get a job. And I think most of us understand the principle of writing the resume, and we present the our best suit of clothes, so to speak, for the employer to look at and say, okay, I got somebody that's pretty good here. But he says, you write also a second resume. And he said, the second resume is your eulogy resume. He says, your eulogy resume is what people say about you when you at your funeral. So he argues that you need to pay attention to your eulogy resume. Rabbi Joseph Soloveitch wrote a book entitled The Lonely Man of Faith, which David Brooks quotes. And he talks about the creation, that in creation, two men were created, not just one. And he calls them Adam 1 and Adam 2. He said Adam 1 embodies the external qualities we put on those applications. Or he says Adam 2 embodies the moral qualities that make up who we are. And thus we are to pay attention to the Adam 2, to the internal qualities that what make us up. And if you don't pay any attention to what you are inside, then you're of little value to those to whom they entrust their business, their family, or whatever to you. But what are those values? Psalm 15, verses 1 to 5. The psalmist talks about who can dwell in your presence. And he lists some things. And I thought, you know what? Those are good qualities to have. And it begins with honesty. David Brooks speaks of an employer who asks every applicant who seeks employment with him, he asks them this question. Describe a time when you told the truth and it hurt you. And his whole point is, are you more concerned about truth or about your career? One writer wrote recently about how he was sick and tired of the lies coming out of Washington. And he had a whole list of them. And at that, he ran out of space. He says, I'm tired of this, I'm tired of this, I'm tired of this, I'm tired of this. And he just listed all of the lies that we've heard on TV and radio and what have you. And he says, I'm sick of all of it. I just want some honesty for once. Carly Fiorina, who used to be the CEO of Hewlett-Packard and now running for president, she said leadership is about character. And character is defined by integrity, trustworthiness, and honesty. We know those things. But they're not the first ones to say them. God said them. God says, tell the truth. Be honest. And Paul wrote in Ephesians 4, lie not one to another, but speak the truth in love. God calls us to be honest people. Integrity. Integrity means the whole of life is uncompromised. What you see is what you are. Going back to Toya Graham's interview that she had with a CNN reporter when she found her son, he was wearing a mask. And she said, "Why are you wearing a mask?" She said, "If you're going to do these things, take the mask off and show your face. Be a person of integrity. Don't hide behind the mask." The Bible has a word for that. And it's called hypocrisy. Hypocrisy means hiding behind a mask. How a person acts in a given situation is what they are inside. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 15, verses 18 and 19, "The things that proceed out of the mouth come from the heart. Those defile the person, for out of the heart comes evil thoughts, murders, adulterers, fornication, thefts, false witness, and slander." A person of integrity doesn't even think about those things, let alone involves themselves in it. A biblical value that we need to teach our kids is integrity. Be a person of integrity. Be a person of character. Be honest. Be trustworthy. Psalm 15 and verse 4 says, "He swears to his own hurt and does not change." In other words, it'll be true even if it is a detriment to himself. And neighbors, friends, family, that's what they see. They see this unwavering virtue. But it also says that we accept responsibility for our actions. I'm responsible for what I do. You're responsible for what you do. We are responsible, and we need to accept responsibility. Not blaming someone else, not blaming circumstances, not blaming anything, but ourselves for the behavior or to the actions for what we've done. That's what integrity is all about. That's what trustworthiness is also about. And when given a responsibility, follow through. If you're not going to follow through, tell them you're not going to do it. Nothing worse, as far as I'm concerned, is someone to say, "Yeah, okay, I'll have this done," and then they don't even bother looking at it, and don't even bother trying. Fairness. This person is just and unbiased. It is what it is. No spin, no excuses. This person treats people the same, no matter who they are. And Jesus was the master at it. He taught you and me to say, or to do, treat others the way that you and I want to be treated. Love your enemies. Do good to those who hurt you. This person calls sin, sin. Doesn't waver. Not being judgmental. But never overlooking sin. And gratitude. Romans chapter 1 and verse 21. Paul writes that these people didn't even give thanks to God. Someone wrote that the lack of gratitude is the soil in which pride grows. And I've got to tell you, we've got so much to be thankful for. You know, it's easy to complain about things. But on the other hand, I'm convinced that we have far more to be thankful for than we have to complain about. And I'm thankful for those who, when you speak to them, they impress you with the fact that they're thankful. Finally, we need to teach them about Jesus Christ. This is not the job of the church. Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 to 4. Paul tells us that we are to teach our children. Judges chapter 2, verse 10, this generation died and was buried with their fathers, and there arose another generation who knew not the Lord or the things that he had done in Israel. And in 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 5, we find Paul commending the faith of Lois and Eunice, the grandmother and mother of Timothy, who passed on the truths to their son and grandson. And we need to teach them that Jesus loves them. The song, Jesus Loves Me, This I Know, is not just a child song. It's an everyday adult song. Our children need to know that Jesus loves them. At the same time, they need to understand that Jesus died for their sins. Sin is a horrible thing. Bob, you got that picture? That's a picture. Everybody, anybody? That's Auschwitz. Auschwitz was the death camp in which literally thousands upon thousands of Jews died. And people say that is the epitome of evil. That is evil. No, it's not. That is the result of evil. That is not evil. You know where evil lies? In the hearts of people. Jesus died for sin. Sin comes from the hearts of people. Problems with race relations is because of sin in the hearts of people. Senseless abuse, if there's ever has been a sin, abuse that makes sense, abuse is because of sin. Theft is because of sin. The treatment of how we treat people is sin. And it's in the hearts of people. That's what Jesus said. This is where it comes from. And not one person that ever comes into this world is immune to it. Everyone is affected by it. Everyone. You have it within you. And that is why Jesus went to the cross, to bring about your redemption, to eradicate sin out of your life, to pay the price for sin. Our children need to hear that. Our children need to hear that, because just because they're raised in a good, wholesome environment, and they're good kids, they never get into trouble and so on, that does not mean that they are not in need of the death of Jesus. They do need the blood of Christ. And finally, we need to teach them that Jesus is coming back for them. Eternity awaits all of us. Eternity is too awesome to describe. It defies the imagination. You read about the streets of gold, the gates of pearl, you read about all the things that are there and what have you, and how great and super and majestic heaven is. Let me tell you something. God is simply using language that you can understand to describe something for you that you cannot understand. The human mind cannot grasp heaven. You can't do it. It's impossible for you. But Jesus said, that's what I've got in store for you. And that's why he would say, believe in God, believe also in me. For in my Father's house are many mansions or many rooms. And I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also. Now I realize our kids aren't thinking about dying. At least I hope they're not. But I do hope they look out there and they see, you know what, there's something far better than this world that's waiting for me. Moms are special. And we need moms who take parenting seriously. We need grandparents who take parenting seriously. We have a nation that has lost its way. Seriously. It's lost its way. And the only way we're going to be able to save it is for the next generation to turn it around. But it's going to take all of us. This next generation is our hope. So let's teach them that they're special. Teach them biblical values. And teach them about Jesus Christ, the hope of the world. I don't know what you are today. I don't know where you are in your walk with God. But I pray that this morning you not let this day go by, but you don't mark it as a very special day for you when you give your life to Jesus Christ. Won't you come while we stand and sing?